intuition is intelligence that we all have, and yet we've been tricked and we keep tricking ourselves into pretending that we don't have it.
Intuition is always there. Even if you turn away from it, it's always going to be there if you turn to it.
We need to embody this intelligence that we have and come into a relationship of deep trust with ourselves and live from that place. You being in your intuition is in service to the greater picture.
Welcome to our final episode of 2020. It's a joy to be with you at this extraordinary moment in our astrology. We are here between the new moon and the solstice, where so much is opening up. It is said to be an extremely important time for humanity and our relationship with our consciousness. We are hosting a winter solstice ritual for members of Presence Collective, which you are very much invited to join. And in this ritual, we will really be anchoring into a place of deep reverence and respect for everything that we have learned during 2020 and coming into a place of embodying this new time that is opening up with the astrological conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter at the solstice. This week, we completed the 3-month journey of the first beautiful leadership immersion. It was such a powerful experience, and I feel more aligned with my trust that this time is calling for a different kind of leadership, one that takes into account the importance of intuition, decolonization, sacred activism, and redefining worth. I will share more about this in the new year. There will be another 3-month program that begins mid-January, alongside a round of my one-to-one work, Presence Mentoring. Although I do offer one-off sessions, I find that something very interesting happens when we meet regularly and go deep into clearing subconscious patterns and opening up gifts and potential from within. And it was especially potent to be in the mentoring process with the one-to-one work alongside this group journey of the leadership immersion. And I am excited to share with you this opportunity again. You can find out more about that if you go onto www.amisha.co.uk and click on the calendar. We have 13 guest teachers on the Beautiful Leadership Immersion, which includes our guest today, who offered a powerful session on leading with soul and how to acknowledge and embody our gifts. My guest this week is actually taking over the hosting role and is asking me questions about my own story and my new book, Intuition, Access Your Inner Wisdom, Trust Your Instincts, Find Your Path. It has been published by DK Books and is available now in the UK and Australia, and available for pre-order in the US and Canada, where it will be released on the 19th of January. If you would like to buy the book one day, please do this soon, as early orders and pre-orders are so important for authors and the journey of a book in this wild world. I also have a small amount of books available, which I'm signing and writing a personal intuitive dedication in for you or to gift to somebody in your life. When you go to order the book, do go to www.amisha.co.uk/intuition and register for the gifts. This is also where you'll find the link to the personally signed and dedicated editions. I have put together the video from our launch event where we had stunning musical performances from Tess Amadeo-Vickery and Ash Radford. There is a workshop with some of my favorite practices, which was recorded in the treehouse around the springtime when I was writing the bulk of the book. And I share the PDF of the additional chapter that I wrote for the audio edition, which is called Playing in the Wild Fields of Trust. I would like to welcome Sally Kempton, who is one of my dear teachers and has been a great support to me through the process of writing this book. I absolutely adore Meditation for the Love of It and have found that when I've shared this with people in my programs, it's really shifted their relationship with meditation from something of a chore to something to actually enjoy and to experience as a refuge and something that adds depth and meaning to our lives. And her book, Awakening Shakti, which outlines information about the different goddesses, is also a companion that I have taken with me around the world to many different countries, and always find that every time I read it, I discover something new. Sally Kempton was our guest on episode 8 of this podcast, as well as episode 92. So I highly recommend giving those a listen or a listen again. She is one of today's most authentic spiritual teachers. She teaches devotional contemplative tantra, an approach to practice that creates a fusion of knowing and loving. Known for her ability to transmit inner experience through transformative practices and contemplation, Sally has been practicing and teaching for 40 years. A disciple of the great Indian guru, Swami Muktananda, she spent 20 years as a teaching Swami in the Saraswati order of Indian monks. In her guru's ashram, she received a traditional training in yoga philosophy and practice, and became a popular teacher, deeply versed in the teachings and practices of Vedanta and Kashmir Shaivism. In 2002, Sally began teaching independently. She now offers heart-to-heart transmission in meditation and life practice through her Awakened Heart Tantra workshops, teleclasses, retreats, and trainings in applied spiritual philosophy. Her workshops and teleconference courses integrate the wisdom of traditional yoga tantra with the insights of contemporary evolutionary spirituality and cutting-edge psychology. She is the author of Meditation for the Love of It, a groundbreaking book on meditation and awakening Shakti. And she also has this other book, which I think is fantastic, which you can find the audio version of, called Doorways to the Infinite. She says of my book, Intuition, "As we struggle to solve the issues that face humanity, more and more of us realize that to deal with the challenges that face us, we need access to a deeper intelligence, a wisdom that can cut through the noise and distraction of daily life and show us the path forward." In this luminous book, Amisha Gadiali points out to us that we have an innate inner wisdom called intuition that is key to personal transformation as well as collective problem solving. Intuition is a clear, inspiring, and practical handbook for developing your own inner knowing, starting from the premise that intuition is an innate form of intelligence that can be developed with practice. Amisha not only defines the forms of intuitive knowing, but offers a series of skillful practices that help you uncover the brilliance of your own intuitive wisdom, the natural inner guidance that can help you make your life meaningful to yourself and genuinely helpful to the world. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that it opens up permission for you to live from your intuitive intelligence. We are taking a break after this episode and modeling rest. We will be back in 3 weeks on the 7th of January. In the meantime, we wish you well and look forward to hearing how you landed the wilds of 2020 through the solstice and deep rest and the turning of the years into 2021. A big thank you to you for being part of this community and all that we have shared this year. And of course, to my team, Annegret Afolderbach and Mary Chan, who are so wonderful to work with and make producing this show an absolute joy. Of course, we couldn't do it without you, and we wouldn't do it without you, because this show is for you, our community. Deep gratitude for listening, for answering the call for this co-creation of a beautiful future, and for those of you that also support the show through leaving reviews and through becoming members of Presence Collective and patrons of this show. Do visit Sally's website, www.sallykempton.com, where you can find information on her upcoming events. From my heart to yours, thank you.
Welcome to The Future is Beautiful, with me, your host, Amisha Gadiali. On this show, we explore the weave between politics, spirituality, creativity, and sustainability. It's time for us to move beyond silos and into an integrated way of being. Every one of us has ideas and personal experiences to share that can lead us to a brighter future. This is the revolution. Despite the challenges we face as a global community or the pressures that we meet in our daily lives, when we stop and dare to dream, to ask ourselves the big questions and to share what we are already doing, we create the future that we wish to wake up for. That future is beautiful.
Amisha, I'm just delighted to be here and to be having this discussion with you about your new book. And, you know, to be able to discuss the topic, which I know has been one I've been contemplating most of my life, you too, of course, and probably virtually everybody who's listening is intensely curious about the subject of intuition and how we can cultivate it and all the things that you speak about in the book. So I just want to say, first of all, this is my brief two-line review. It's a really helpful book, especially because you give so many methods and practices for cultivating intuition. You know, I want to offer a shout out to what you've done here, really breaking down a very subtle topic, offering guidance as to how we understand intuition. And it's a book that you are uniquely qualified to write, since you have actually been opening to intuitive guidance and living by it for many years. So let's just start at the beginning. I'll just ask you the basic question: how do you define intuition?
Well, the easiest way to define intuition, it is intuition, right? So it's the way in which we learn and evolve. In a way, I feel it's the intelligence that we all have that is bigger than the rational mind, that there is so much that each one of us knows that we don't know that we know. We live in a world that has really, in a culture that has really narrowed down what our intelligence is or what we understand our intelligence to be. And then in doing that, it has kind of tricked us into thinking that we don't know certain things, that we don't have this very innate quality of wisdom inside of us. And we don't have access to all of this guidance from a whole variety of sources, whether it's from our right knee or our belly or our heart or our ancestors or perhaps the trees, or, you know, that there's information that we can tap into that offers us, I guess, something that is a bit like truth. What is truth for us? And of course, it's a truth that what is mine, the way that I can understand something in what makes sense for my own life is so different to what it might be for somebody else. And for me, that's very different to how, say, the British cultural education system was, where it's like there's right for everyone and there's wrong for everyone. And so this is the way that you do things. This is how information is laid out. This is how you use your intelligence. Yeah, for me, it's just that as simple as being able to trust that which we know, being able to trust that whatever it is we need to know, that in that moment, we'll be able to access that information somehow. And that means that you might not see like the whole picture, but you'll see the next step. And yeah, I spend the day with my nieces today and I watch them 3 and 5, and they know all kinds of things that no one's taught them. And when I ask them, how do you know that? I just know. And it's like we have that. And for me, that's what intuition is. Part of it is just that knowing. And then part of it is the guidance for our own lives and then how that relates into the bigger picture, the collective picture of all of us.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And one of the questions that this brings up, which you actually do address in the book, is that our intuitions come to us in different ways. So, and your particular style of intuition may be different than mine. I mean, the thing you said about not necessarily knowing the whole picture, but being able to discern the next step. You know, I've found after years of cultivating intuition, trying to just realize what it is, in circumstances like all of us, where there are a lot of demands coming from other people on the outside, and you have to sort out what is real intuitive guidance. You know, it's always a question of, I find myself taking a step that I didn't rationally choose and have come to realize that that is a form of intuitive guidance. So can you speak about some of the other ways, some of the different ways in which we experience intuition?
So definitely that thing of when you just get a sense, like, I need to go here, I need to turn this direction, like that kind of, and you don't quite know why, and maybe you're making a choice that's very much like outside of your usual pattern, because I think that's often where intuition will take you. It's away from like what your routine is, what the kind of normal just habit is. And so it will take you somewhere else where you might learn something, see something differently, open up a different door. I find that intuition has a way of speaking to people in so many different languages, if you like. And for me, it's very much like clear information that I see. And I see a lot of pictures when I meditate, when I close my eyes, I kind of see a lot of pictures. I often get quite clear messages in my dreams as well. That I can tell the difference now between a dream with intuitive guidance and a dream that's kind of processing. And so quite often I will get a piece of information that really supports me in knowing what to do about something or becoming aware of something that I might not have been paying attention to. One of my friends has this relationship with her intuition, which sounds really fun. It's never happened for me, but it's really based on like big symbols. And for some reason, books have a way of just flying out of bookshelves in front of her, and she'll just see it and she'll be like, oh, okay, that was the answer to my question. Yeah. So I think that there are so many ways that it can show up. It perhaps depends a little bit on like what your general kind of leaning is. Like if you're very visual or very audio as a person, then you might kind of get the information in that way.
One of the ideas that we have about intuitive guidance is that it's supposed to come in the ways that you're describing, which is actually very, very classical. You know, you hear a message, you have a dream, you see a picture. And for people who don't have that, who don't get kind of clairaudience or clairvoyance kind of guidance and are more kinesthetic, what experience have you had in helping people tune into the intuition that's not that clear cut? You are an intuitive, I would say, in Jung's terms, your intuitive function is very high.
Yeah. But it takes some understanding and training, I would say, even if you're naturally intuitive, because you have to go through a whole process of kind of being able to actually like create some boundaries and sort of level out all the noise to really find like what's clear. But that's a whole different story that we can come back to.
Yeah.
I would say that it's about getting to a place where you trust yourself. And coming into a way of being where you're less in that sort of default mode network thinking part of your brain, where there's a lot of like noise and back and forth, and just being able to just quieten things down enough to allow for a different bit of inspiration to come in. I feel like we all have access to our intuition, and it doesn't have to be of the realm of like hearing voices and seeing visions and that kind of thing. Although what I have discovered is like a lot of people do have access to that. But again, it's something that they may have dismissed or not really like cultivated. And I think with all of these things, we need teachers and friends and mentors and guides and community that helps us to understand like how this is normal, because it gets put so down in the shame areas. But being able to be in connection with one's intuition is being able to like be in a real relationship with oneself. And so it doesn't have to be so like kind of quote unquote like magical. And I find writing is the way that most people can access something. You offer a lot of contemplation practices and writing when you really just ask a question, start writing it out. Or there's a tactic where you write with your non-dominant hand so that something else might come. I find that I've seen people really surprise themselves with what comes out when they start writing the answer to a question that they might have been thinking about. And actually, one of my other favorite practices that's in the book that's really, really simple is talking to a friend that's a good listener. And it's because I know that sometimes when I don't feel clear, that if I call a friend that's a good listener and I just start talking about whatever it is that I'm trying to make a decision about or discern kind of around, that I'll just hear myself say the answer. And I'll be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I knew that, but I needed to get the information out somehow, to feel like it was real guidance, or to be able to trust myself. And I think sometimes that's where a really good friend is amazing, because you get a little bit of a validation feedback loop, which is often helpful when you're cultivating trust.
Really true. And I just remembered something that a friend of mine offers in this regard. He said, if you were giving this advice to a friend, if you had a friend facing this situation, what would you tell them? And that's a way of using that same understanding to kind of bring forth the wisdom that you could offer to another person, but have a hard time finding yourself.
Yeah, genius. Because we're all much better at seeing things for someone else.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and then there's the sort of deeper point, which is that when two consciousnesses that are in tune with each other come together, then it creates an arena for wisdom. It amplifies our own intuition. I think everyone would love to hear some of your own experience of following intuitive guidance. You talk about it some in the foreword, your own journey, including that wonderful story about the tree. But can we sort of start at a youngish place and just hear how you've navigated this journey over the years? And what were your discoveries about your own intuition and how you've learned to trust it?
Well, big question.
Your whole biography.
Yeah, and messy as well, that's for sure. Actually, for this book, because there isn't much personal story in it, just the foreword and the acknowledgements, and I wrote an extra chapter for the audio version, which I'm also sharing with people that come and just do the little registration for the gifts that I'm giving for friends and community with this book. And I did get to share a little bit more about those stories there. I would say that I was a very intuitive child. When I look at photos, I see that I was always doing lots of weird like things with my hands, and my head's always tilted to the side, a big kind of daydreamer type Pisces water sign kind of sensitive child. And for me, it got quite messy in my teen years, and I kind of had a very wild time and really like was sort of cut off from. But I think because I'd actually sort of narrowed, I'd ended up somehow from being somebody that was going to work in the arts and in creative space, where it's actually one of those places that it's where you're allowed to be very intuitive. You know, the arts by their nature are intuitive. Like, how do you design a dress or make a painting or something? That's all your intuition. That's just kind of telling, you know, guiding you with where to put your brush and whatnot. And I'd sort of narrowed into this place where I was studying maths, history, and economics, you know, super interesting. Like, I've always been like interested in how the world works as well, but I was very cut off from myself in that process. And I had also grown up in a very intuitive household. My parents, both psychiatrists, my dad was a Jungian analyst. and believed so deeply in intuition. In fact, he'd come to England. My mum didn't want to move to England because she felt like she trained to be a psychiatrist in India, and then she wanted to practice in India. And my dad had this thing, I want to study psychotherapy, and then I need to go and do it in Europe, like where it's close to the source. And so he came, and actually my mum didn't come to England for a couple of years after that. And the whole plan was that they would come just for my dad's psychoanalysis. And then after 4 years, they would go back to India. And then, of course, here we are, you know, like 50 years later. And I didn't know that actually until I was quite old, when I said one day, my dad said, oh yeah, we never really planned to like live here. And I was like, oh. And so he actually started studying Freud. It didn't take very long for him to not really get on very well with Freud. And then he was introduced to Jung, and that really opened up a lot for him. Coming from this background of having, my father was Jain, so I had a Jain, like very religious, religious grandparents, and that only wore white kadi, and that were always doing fasts and taking part in all kinds of charity work and that kind of thing, lived very simply, at least when I knew them. I'm sure there were different stages of life. And actually, my grandmother, I found a note that she'd written out in Gujarati just when she was dying to me, my parents, and my brother, which said something to the effect of, I do not care about your material pursuits, you know, something about like the importance of our spiritual pursuits. And so somehow that was always there, even though I wasn't necessarily completely engaged in it. And my dad, yeah, he really taught me a lot about intuition, about the realities of the human mind. And he had a private practice in the house, and I was the tea maker for that practice, and which I loved. It was probably my favorite job I've had. I also got to kind of be like absorbed into a world where there was this understanding that humans struggle and that we're really complex, and that we can trust in that which hasn't been laid out before for us. And so having parents that had not only like migrated, I mean, of course, a lot of doctors did that, but they lived in a place where there were no Indians, the psychoanalysis, the fact that my mum worked as well. Like, there was lots of stuff about our setup that was very unique. And my parents, you know, their marriage came from intuition. They met and they were different religions, and that was a huge thing in the early 70s. They both kind of knew when they met that they were going to get married. And my dad had a dream that first night that he met my mum, which showed him. And then he asked her to marry him the next day. Actually, my mum was just telling me today that my dad wrote short stories when he was a teenager, or like teenager, early 20s, for a local newspaper. And that the heroine in his stories was called Hema, which is my mum's name. And so all of these things, I grew up kind of with all these stories.
Yes, he is a major actor. Yes.
Yeah. And so I had that understanding that you could make kind of bold decisions without really being able to explain them to anyone. And then with my dad, it was also that you could push cultural boundaries because of the conviction that he had in his intuition. And actually, he told me that he'd known what age he was going to die at since he was a child. And he was right. He was within 6 months of the time that he told me. Like, so I guess that was always there. But then I was very indoctrined in British culture and intellectual British culture. And I was working in politics and sustainability and all of that kind of thing. And I really had like a sense that like it wasn't cool to like be into spirituality or trust my intuition. I had a very like hard time with that. And I suppose I did things in a way because I also felt like I wasn't getting the full picture of reality. And so there was a lot of kind of, you know, wildness and experimentation with, I can say this now, my dad's dead, with some like illegal substances and that kind of thing. And just being like the good Gujarati, like conditioning is still there, the good girl, but a little bit. But yeah, so I think that a lot of that is around knowing that there's more to this reality than we have been told is what this is. And so like looking for ways to push through that. And I had a lot of experiences that were very strong. I had like three near-death experiences at the ages of 19, 21, and then 24 was not exactly a near-death experience, but a friend of mine was hit by a car and killed in front of me. So the 19, I went 50 meters down the side of a mountain in a bus in Bolivia. And I was with actually the friend that then later died. At 21, I got driven over by a four-wheel drive pickup truck. And then at 24, my friend got killed in this hit and run whilst I was visiting her. So these three events at that age, they forced me into deepening my understanding of reality. They forced me into having to delve deeper into the unseen worlds. For example, like after I got run over, the doctors couldn't really do anything about the pain. And so I kind of like kept asking, you know, around. And then I was sort of on that path of healers and kind of opening up to how the different practices could relieve that pain, but also the aspects of trauma and things that had come up from that. And then I still fought it, kept trying to have like a really straight career and job and life and, you know, work in politics, work in sustainable fashion, be co-founder of a tech startup, that kind of thing. And it was like every time something would just knock on my door and like make me see more than there was. And I it was always there. And actually there were all these little clues that were actually not that subtle. For example, in India, everyone's really big on your astrology and how your astrology, you know, affects your life. And so, of course, the big question for any woman when she turns about 19, 20 is the wedding. And my astrology, and not just my astrology, but several swamis had said to my parents over the course of my life, she can't get married before she's 27. And so I knew this, and this was like treated as like very important information. And anytime I told any auntie or uncle that I couldn't get married before I was 27, everyone just backs off, because if it's in the astrology, you're like, that's like, okay. So I still thought, okay, well, that means at 28, I'm going to get married. And of course it didn't. It meant at 27, like the depth of like the all or nothing of the spiritual path really opened up. And and so
with Shiva that you were marrying, as it were.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course he goes to the mountains for long periods of time.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess that was it. I at a certain point I had to surrender to what was my path. And once I really did that, everything got I want to say a lot more smooth, but that doesn't seem that true from the years that you and I have known each other, Sally. But in a way it did. It got less dramatic in terms of I wasn't being driven over by trucks or anything like that. But yeah, I don't know if that's the beginnings of an answer to your question, because I guess what's always been happening within all of that is very powerful, strong dreams and very like clear insight about things and like strong healing abilities. I didn't want any of it. So it was really, you know, I know that a lot of people aspire to this kind of work. I didn't want it. It felt really scary. It felt really weird. It felt really isolating. And yet I also knew I didn't have a choice. It was probably, I mean, I feel like I was always deepening into it kind of secretly, but I guess it was around like, yeah, around 2012, that I just said, okay, I'm going to make this the center of my life. And I'm actually gonna, you know, because I think before I'd met teachers and they had seen something in me and they had but they'd said things to me and I just sort of laughed and backed away. And then I think it was probably only in 2012 that I said, okay, I'm here, I'm listening. I mean, that the funny thing is I always had this notion that I was in some spiritual closet and that it was really like not safe to be in that space of what I'm calling spirituality, but in a way it's intuition, because it was just about knowing that there was more than this. We call that spirituality, like believing in something bigger, and maybe it becomes God or Shakti or something. But that kind of recognition that this sort of material dominant culture wasn't enough, and it was a story, it wasn't like reality. That was really scary. And I felt so much fear in my body around that, which I kind of now understand as ancestral and cultural trauma. But at the time, I didn't know that.
Cultural and ancestral trauma, but also probably personal karmic trauma. Being an intuitive for a woman has historically been kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
I sense that in you, that you got yourself into trouble with it at some point in your journey of lifetime. I know people, as you say, that really want to develop intuitive skills and healing skills and think it's really cool. And then there are people who are like, thank you, no. You know, as you intuit, it's often because you have embodied memories of dramatic difficulties as a result of your following your intuitions and cultures that don't support it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, okay, let's not go into the reincarnation conversation. A part of your work is helping people release ancestral trauma, right?
Yeah, it's become that. I mean, yeah, what I was going to say is that I thought I was in this closet the whole time. And of course, you can't hide that far from your Dharma. And actually, I did my Reiki master like years ago, actually with my parents one time when we were in India, and the three of us did it together. And I had created this jewelry label, but I didn't realize how obvious it was, but it was basically all about how like the crystals work together. And there was just all this stuff that was like, it was healing jewelry. It was very beautiful, stylish, like healing jewelry. And it was at a time where you could only really get very like hippie looking things if you wanted something that had like more of that kind of meaning. And I had set that up when I was like 22 or something. So like I was kind of doing it in the way that was accessible to what I perceived to be like the safe boundaries. But yeah, of course I was always doing it. I was opening up conversations around healing, but through a bracelet or something. And so, yeah. And so that was there. But when it like really, really, really opened up was, there was just like a moment where I just kept meeting amazing teachers and mystics, and I wasn't running away from it. And so I was like, okay, I'm listening. I had a couple of years where I felt really held in the releasing of that fear, and really gently, and sometimes not so gently, like pushed into the work that I'm doing now, which I now feel very comfortable with. It's a real joy to be able to do this work. Yeah, that was a very strong year of spending time together, and also with a community of people that, it was a bit like X-Men training kind of camp or something. And there was this kind of like opening up of like psychic realms and gifts. And then there was a lot of weird things around like, yeah, like competition of like who was opening up more and being asked to do things. And for me, I mean, I don't think I've cried as much as I did that year. Like it was so terrifying and so just like that part in me that was like, oh, okay, this all makes more sense than what I've been pretending reality is. And then at the same time, like, I know I don't really want anyone to know about this. Then there's just been a lot of pushes that have opened that up. And then also, you know, even things like, I remember probably like one of the first times that I came to a workshop with you, and then we were doing some kind of meditation. And then I just said, oh, I saw this and this and this. I just thought everyone saw all those kind of things as well. And so I think when you're in community, it can open up both you realizing that like other people are seeing some of these things and it's normal, and then also open up that kind of understanding of like, oh, okay, so this is like mine and I have to cultivate this because this isn't what everyone's seeing. So it's like both of those things happen.
Do you want to talk about some of the, you know, or one of the dramatic push experiences? I remember you telling me once that you spent a year with a shaman in, I believe it was in Africa.
It wasn't in Africa, but his training had come through African traditions, because I sent him that extra chapter of my book and he said, what is sacred is secret. And so it makes me go, phew. But I did share a bit of it in the book anyway, in this extra chapter, because I feel like we need stories. I think sometimes a lot of the, you know, the detail is just for us maybe, or for moments, for sharing with people in real time and when in very close moments. But at the same time, I think we all need reference points. One of the experiences that I have shared before, and I'm happy to share again, is that, so this is the same teacher that I was just saying, it was a bit like X-Men training. But there was one day in particular where we were sat together and I was asking him questions and he just said, you know all this. You know, I think he even said, do you even know who you are? You know, I was like you know, okay, I think the answer is no. And I don't, you know, there's something quite, yeah, intense about this question, because we've been so conditioned to believe that it's weird to kind of have access to this, or even on the other side, you know, not wanting to be special. And that's definitely come up for me a lot. And so then what happened with him that day was he said, you need to come into your power as a healer. And there's a very unique way that you have that can support people. Basically, go find this tree and the tree is going to tell you what to do. And then, you know, start working and call me and I'll check what you're doing and, you know, and we'll go from there. And when he said that, it made like very little sense to me. It wasn't like, oh yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah. Just go find the tree, talk to the tree. You know, it was like, it was like one of those real coming of age moments. And I went into the park. I went up to all like the most hidden, magnificent looking trees and I kept getting a no. Not this tree. And then of course, because of where I was at with my shame and my not wanting to be seen, the tree was the one on the footpath, right opposite from the tennis courts and next to the AstroTurf where all the young boys played football and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is where you want me to sit. Okay.
Right in front of
you. And so I sat and I asked the tree, like, how do I do this? And sure enough, the tree told me. It's hard to explain, like, how does a tree tell you? Because what I've really come to understand is that it's not about, okay, here are three steps. I would never be somebody that would be like, here's my healing modality and here's the training and come and do it. Because I feel like everyone has their own, and it's how do we unlock that? And you need great teachers, guides, mentors, friends, community to help you unlock your way. But if I just said, do this, do this, do this, do this, then that person would be missing their own like language and their own way. That was what was really amazing, actually, about this mystic and that relationship, because you know, he was like, oh, I've never seen anyone that can do this. And he was like, it's like you're using that kind of the more like a psychologist, like going deep into psychological patterns, but with energy and you're able to clear it and open up gifts. He hadn't seen that, because actually a lot of the people in that community, when they did healings, it was really like, there's an alien and there's, you know,
there's a spirit here.
Yeah. And when I work, it's not really like that. It's much more kind of in the body, in the patterning of this life. And that's just how I see it. I never kind of see like a golden unicorn is coming in and like doing this and taking you to this planet. Like, it's not really like that for me. I was really lucky to have that group, you know, and then I had a lot of like, well, how do I know that this is helpful? And how do I know if it's, you know, the last thing I would want to do is like hurt people by projecting stuff onto them. And so through that teacher in that community, I went through quite a deep process of clearing a lot, and also like having them check on things a lot. When I then met other intuitive people that I felt like a connection with, I would always ask them, can you watch me work? Like, you know, can you just tell me what you see? So that I could just get a sense. And then, and because also, you know, I had a lot of questions. I made one friend in particular, and we were on a yoga retreat, and she was like a psychic healer. And I just sat down and I was like, when you see this, how do you know if it's, you know, because how do you, you have all these questions and
the real practical questions about this.
Yeah. Asking for help in that way was really helpful. And then cultivating a really deep relationship with trees as teachers, and then feeling like I could go and ask them as well when I needed a second opinion or an outside eye. And yeah, and then getting to a place of trust, but that's taken years to cultivate.
One thing that came to me as I was hearing your story, which is very beautiful and authentic, is the way we outsource intuition. And I actually believe it's one of the ways we cultivate intuition is by outsourcing it, by finding an external source that we trust, which could be a teacher. It could be something in nature, a tree, or, you know, or an animal, or a spirit, which, you know, many of the shamanic intuitive workers work with. And then my question is, at what point do you need to stop outsourcing and really find out who that is inside you? Being able to find a trustworthy source of intuitive wisdom is a very big deal. Of course, a lot of people get kind of screwed up by, you know, by trusting beings who actually are not fully trustworthy. But assuming that you do find a source that's trustworthy, to bring it back to yourself, I have found, is a years long process. To bring it back to yourself without arrogance, with a questioning humility. So do you want to talk a little bit about that process?
You know, Sally, talking to you about it and feeling like the seat of wisdom and where you are, and it feels funny to even talk in a way of like a place of arrival.
I know. No, I understand. Think of it like this. What changes when you start to realize that there are moments when, you know, when the inner guru, the inner teacher, the inner knower is active? You know, for me, it's been a very big deal to start realizing that I actually have, in a very big sense, the guru inside. Not always. The guru is not always active. I actually believe that there is a process most of us have to go through. And if we don't go through the process with some humility, in other words, if we don't, we have to have a teacher, you know, and we have to some extent surrender to the teacher, at least one teacher in our life. We have to be willing to surrender, because that's what gets us out of our bullshit. And then, generally speaking, we have to free ourselves from the teacher. And that process, I believe, it's not really in the manuals. It's not in the books. It's a secret process, as your teacher said. But I find it's very helpful when people have gone through that process. And I'm not saying that you're fully enlightened or that you're claiming to be fully enlightened. How do you know that that moment has happened? And one of the reasons I'm asking is because I have a lot of intuitive friends, as I know you do, who are pretty confident about their intuitions and who do harm by the strength of their personalities imposing their view of another person, sometimes helpfully, sometimes quite destructively. So I really honor your, you know, your feeling of do no harm, of being shy about imposing structures. And yet you clearly have learned to speak the guidance that you receive for other people. Can you talk a little bit about it? I know it's difficult to put these these ineffable things into words, but I think it would be helpful.
I feel like that's something that's happened for me during 2020. So when I'm in a session with someone, like an intuitive therapy session, it feels like a different space. Like I kind of step out of me and I step into this, like into the space. And I don't do like oracle readings. I did learn that. I'm just not interested in it because I feel like there's multiple possibilities always. And I don't really want to tell anyone like what anything is. I just like to ask questions, and that's part of it, you know, like knowing the questions to ask. I never give any friends or even clients like unsolicited intuitive guidance. And I'm not really interested in it either. And there was a moment when all this was really, really opening up and I was receiving so much information, and I kind of did want to like tell people things all the time and read things all the time, right? Like if you have the ability to go into that space, that was really interesting for a while. And then now it's not. Like now I'd just much rather look at the sky and like just like have my own space. That shift happened for me a few years ago of not prying into anything. And so only going where I'm really invited or asked. I would say that I had a huge issue of relying too much on other people's opinions and advice and validation. That has got me into a lot of trouble. It has been a big source of disempowerment in my life. And what was interesting with that mystic, for example, he just texted me one day and said, "Sweetheart, the next thing for you is in India." And I just knew, oh, I'm not going to see him again. That was it, done. And of course, I had to grieve that because I felt, oh, I thought I had a whole community, family, like we're in this together. And now I'm back on my own. And now I've got to go to India. Like, where do I go? And so then I had to listen, okay, where to go? And you know, and I have met people along the way that have appeared to be very helpful. There's been harm. I've met other people along the way that have been really helpful in that process. And I definitely have had periods of feeling like I need to ask lots of people all the time. You saw me a few times last year and I was brought to my absolute knees last year. So many of the core relationships in my life just evaporated very dramatically and in ways that really was very hurtful and confusing, and that involved like intuitive information, like, or other people's readings of intuitive information, or the readings that other people had got about me from other, and I was just like, this is just like, I'm out, you know? And I really felt this deep, very deep surrender. I feel like I accepted that death as gracefully as one can. I cried a lot. When I was with you, like this time last year, I was driving up and down the one from LA to San Francisco, just crying and allowing, in a way, what I now understand was dying was that part of me that was giving my power away, giving my Shakti away, not trusting my Shakti. I had then cultivated like a life with people that liked that, were feeding off that, and I was happily feeding them. The goddesses came in and went, no, you don't, and burnt my house down. You know, I just was landing from that. And it was really interesting. Then this book offer came in, and it wasn't something that I thought I would. It's not something I have ever had I'm going to write a book on intuition, because like everyone else, I'm like, what is intuition? How do you explain it? How do you know? And yet when that invitation came in, I felt the yes in my body. And it was interesting that it came in like sort of at the end of that death. There was a few more months of that death to go. And then, you know, and then I came up to see you, didn't I, the day that the actual, like the official offer came in, and we were talking about like, oh, okay, like, yeah, how to write a book on intuition. And this year for me has been phenomenal. I really took the invitation of 2020 to spend a lot of time on my own. I've been spending fair amounts of time on Zoom, of course, with The Future is Beautiful and the different communities that I'm part of. But the process of sitting down and writing this book and really feeling into what's useful, what is it that we all need to have opened up in us? And then finding all of that information just pouring out of me, and also not like asking people, you know, like even getting it read just like very late before it was going to print, like a whole different relationship with trust of myself came in. And I felt like it was because of really allowing like everything to, like that really deep descent last year, and allowing that deep clearing. And then realizing that I know this information, and that we all do, actually. This is what came up when I realized I had to do these healing sessions, and it really came up with this book. The time that we're in, it needs this information. And we are at a time where it is safer than it has ever been for a woman like me to be talking about this. That doesn't take away what that might bring up internally. In fact, the night that I wrote the nine principles during spring Navaratri in silence, the night that I finished, I had a dream. I was staying in this treehouse and I had a dream. In fact, I woke up so hot, I had to check that it wasn't actually happening. But in this dream, some like young racist, like British kind of EDL kind of teenager lads were setting fire to my treehouse, burning me alive. And I was like, is this happening? No, okay, it's a dream. And when you go through those initiations, you have to mature to hold that. I guess that's where I feel now, that it's good to be humble and it's good to always be a student and to ask for help and support when you need it. But you also have to trust yourself and you have to get out of your way and you have to just grow up and acknowledge that this is important and the world needs this. And I think that that's part of the process that I've been in the bigger picture. And then that has also meant that whether it's information for other people or whether it's my own intuition about what my next moves are, like I have a different relationship with that because of going through that process and saying yes to the initiation.
Hello, we're taking a short pause from the conversation. On behalf of our team and our community, thank you for being here and co-creating The Future is Beautiful. Much dedication, love, and time goes into the production of this show. We believe in being advertising free in a world that's always trying to sell us stuff we don't need. And so we make this show with you and for you, thanks to your support. There are three ways you can be more involved. So we can share the vision, wisdom, and creativity here as we explore what it means to be a human in this time. You can support the podcast by sharing it with your friends, posting episodes on social media, and doing iTunes reviews. You can support as a patron by making a monthly or one-off donation of your choice. And with this, you join the Global Patrons Group and monthly video calls where we share connection and insight. You get to know the other amazing patrons from around the world, their stories and their work. And you offer direct support to me and the team, as well as being brought into the behind the scenes of creating something like this. It sounds like a lot, but it's as much or as little as you want to get involved in. You can become a member of Presence, our membership collective of care and practice, where we explore how to embody the themes of the podcast with workshops, calls, special events, tree whispers, and powerful tools, practices, and rituals that you can bring into your life. This is open to absolutely everybody as we create an inclusive and diverse space that celebrates well-being as a human right, where we explore together what it means to be creative, courageous, and connected to ourselves, each other, and the earth. This is about embodying sacred activism. We love meeting patrons and Presence members and how being part in this way weaves our lives together as well as making this show possible. If anything from this conversation has moved or inspired you, please get more involved. All information can be found at www.thefutureisbeautiful.co/community. This show really can't go on without your patronage and presence membership, so please do make it happen. And now, back to the conversation.
It brings us to some of the, actually, I think, most important things in the book, which is the 9 principles and also the extraordinary wealth of practices that you offer. And so I don't want to ask you to give away the book, but, you know, what one of the, I think, really significant things that you talk about is how there are certain forms of cultivation that are necessary that we all of us have wild, as you say, unconscious intuition. But there's a big difference between the unconscious intuition. And I remember when I first met my husband, we had a business lunch and I got out of his car and this voice came to me which said, if somebody doesn't save me, I'm going to marry this guy and it's not a good idea. So, and then I fell in love with him and it all happened. And it wasn't a good idea, but it had a lot of positive things about it. But that was my first experience of actually clairaudient intuition. And I was in no position, I didn't have the psychological strength to actually follow it. But I think all of us have those experiences, either positively or negatively, and then we regret afterwards that we didn't pay attention. What you're offering in this book is methods of cultivating your intuitive sense so that when they come up in the wild, as it were, we can tell the difference between something that we should follow. Carolyn Mace, who of course writes a great deal about intuition and who is a brilliant intuitive herself, one of the things that she often says is if you don't follow your intuition will desert you. She does it, she's hard ass. So you in the book say, actually, it's not like that. Intuition is always there. Even if you turn away from it, it's always going to be there if you turn to it.
Mm.
So would you like to just mention the 9 principles and then let's talk about some of what I think are the real gold star practices for cultivating?
Yeah. So the principles are create space.
Like, what does that mean? Creating space. How do we do that other than having a room we go to?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it is just around how busy we make ourselves and not just the physical space around us, but just what is happening in our minds. And if we have schedules where we're just one thing to the next, like how are you going to have space for insight?
Yeah. So it's basically a space to get past the demands of daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next one, which in a way is one of the most challenging of the doorways, is be open. And in a way, that's what we've been talking about a lot. I do feel like intuition is like more of a loyal friend. It's not going to desert you, but like if you keep ignoring it, it's not going to keep calling. But of course, the day you call, it will say, hi, I'm here. If you're of a certain nature or your karmic path is a certain way, as mine was, if you ignore your intuition, she will just get louder and more violent until
beating up your body, making you sick, sending fires to run you over, etc., etc.
Yeah. And that happens for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people open up to all of this because they get beaten up by it in some way and kind of woken up out of not paying attention or hiding from themselves. The principle around being open is really about understanding our conditioning and how it affects us, the way that our thought patterns work. For example, there being 60,000 thoughts a day and that on average being 95% the same that you had yesterday, realizing like these kind of cycles that we're in and understanding how programmed we are from the first 7 years of our lives and how what that forms our subconscious and then how much our subconscious actually affects who we are as adults. And for this, I always like to say, like, just think of people in your life and imagine what they were like when they were 7. And you can probably, for most of them, it's quite easy to see. And definitely you can do that for some politicians. It's very obvious when people haven't done any like real deep reflective inner work, you can literally see the seven-year-old like playing out their patterns, and sometimes with very devastating global consequences. So this is being open and knowing that, and then understanding, you know, why we need an open mind, because we can just narrow everything so much. We're so limited, we can't even see. The book might be open at the page with the bit of guidance that we need, and we can't even see it. And so openness allows us to pay attention to what's there. And then the third principle is embody. Of course, we know that this one is very important. What I share is this understanding of there not actually being this distinction between the body and the mind, you know, that we've sort of done in Western culture, where we're kind of very much like, oh, that's my mind. And then I have like a kidney and like a liver and a finger. But actually understanding ourself as there being intelligence everywhere, and the interrelationship between the intelligence. And then this is also where a healthy relationship with emotions, which is very rare in this culture. And when I keep saying this culture, and I just mean like the dominant culture of what's on TV now, most in most countries around the world. And then understanding trauma in the body and where our trauma is impacting how we feel and what we think, and therefore what we understand to be possible and how that limits us. And then also understanding about the different brain centers in our body as well.
Yeah, it's a big deal, embodiment, actually. It's work of a lifetime for most of us.
And again, if some of us aren't paying attention, we will be driven over by trucks. But, you know, I feel like with embodiment as well, if one isn't doing embodiment practices, be it yoga or even just walking, dancing, noticing, the body can get so stuck in so many places. And it's like you can't even feel that pain anymore. It becomes so normal and you don't even realize how stuck you are. And actually, when you're in that process of embodiment, like it's kind of amazing, because then you're getting signals from all these different parts of your body. You start to be able to feel different parts of yourself in a whole new way. And that also opens up so much guidance and wisdom and intelligence. And I keep using this word intelligence, because as I was writing this book, just, I'm not writing a woo-woo book. I'm not writing a book that anyone can dare call woo-woo, because it's just, we just don't have time for this disrespect anymore. It's intelligence. And I was thinking about this the other day. The analogy that came into my mind was like, if everybody just said, right, stop putting your right foot on the ground. Don't use your right foot. It's crazy. It's strange. It's obscene. It's disgusting to use your right foot. And then everyone started hopping whilst having a perfectly good right foot. That's strange to me. And I feel like in a way, that's what intuition is. It's intelligence that we all have. And yet we've been tricked, and we keep tricking ourselves into pretending that we don't have it. And then we're just kind of hopping around when we could just use both feet.
That's a beautiful image, actually. It's really helpful image.
That didn't come in time for the book, but it's just when I was just feeling into it, yes, like last week. And just, and actually for me, I feel like the process of writing this book has really taken me into that place of, this is too important. And with all of the stakes that we are facing in the world that we're living in, where the stakes are so high for so many people and for humanity in general, we all need to be tapping into this intelligence, because I believe that the wisdom that we need is already here. It's here, it's in all of us, but it's being wasted because we don't honor it. Imagine if all of us were able to step into that, what that would change in this world.
Totally. One of the things that you speak about, and that's very significant, I think, is how we have to clear ourselves, clear our bodies, clear our belief systems, so that our intuitions are trustworthy, not only for us, but also for others. And I always think of George W. Bush, who, you know, was a faith-based intuitive, and who used to say, when he made some terrible decision about U.S. foreign policy. It's my gut. I trust my gut. And you're like, oh my God. It's like, you know, God bless George W. Bush, but he should not have been trusting his gut in these circumstances. You know, and obviously in his case, he had an entire ideology, family, ancestral, social, you know, U.S. establishment ideology and the influence of the people around him. But it's the clarification as you continue into the practices. A lot of them are about how you clarify your intuition and how you develop it. So I just want to leave some time to talk about some of the practices that I feel are particularly important and what you think are particularly important. But let's finish the principles first.
Yeah. And I feel like that's why I focus so much on that in this book, because that question that everybody asks, how do I know if it's my intuition or not? It's like, the more that you're able to clarify, decondition, embody, then the more that you can understand and discern between patterning and intuition. And the more that you're engaged in these kinds of practices, you know, then it goes from, oh, I had that clear insight when I was meditating, to like, oh, I just had that clear insight. And I know that feeling because I remember it from when I was meditating. And so we're always cultivating in that way. And then we even just understand things like on the level of with embodiment of nutrition and microbiome, and how your gut feeling is very, everyone can say, oh, I had the gut feeling. But like, if your gut's full of McDonald's, that's a particular kind of gut feeling. And so
that's a potato chips.
Yeah. And so then how again can you cultivate your gut, all of it, to be as potent and clear as is possible? So the next principle is be still. And this is, of course, around meditation and the subtle body, also energy centers and kind of understanding how energy works in your body, understanding brain waves and how to develop, choosing to be in different brainwave states and knowing what brainwave states are helpful for what. And therefore, when you're in like an alpha brainwave state, there's like much more intuition that comes in. And so how do you get into that state? And so realizing that there are things that you can do around that. And then we have free yourself. This goes deeper into the ego and that relationship between our ego and our soul, kind of understanding the way the sort of the games between the games that our ego basically plays with us, and how to enjoy that process more and liberate ourselves within that process. This is also about coming into a deeper relationship with your soul, becoming a leader in the way in which I believe leadership really is at this time, in this space of beautiful leadership where we are not following. We're not like leading to dominate. It's like really that soul-led leadership. It's being able to really come into that space of knowing why you're here and knowing who you are and what your essence is, and how to bring that into form in this world.
Yeah, beautifully said.
And then we have listen. It's about understanding our senses and the different ways that we can listen. And so the different ways that we receive information. And then with that understanding, you know, the clairs, or like what are kind of known as the, I was going to say extraterrestrial, no, extrasensory perceptions.
Yes. X-Men qualities.
The X-Men qualities, which we all have. Of course, we all have natural leanings towards some over others. But they are things that we can cultivate in the same way that we all learn how to read and write, and we all learn how to speak, you know, a language. And so they are things that can be cultivated. And sometimes, you know, I'll be with someone that that will say something like, oh yeah, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything. And then they'll just be like, what's that smell? And I'll be like, oh, what are you smelling? This happened actually with a friend who's a teacher, a leader in the yoga world. And she was telling me she doesn't get like these visions. And we were actually talking about a mutual friend who had died. And we were talking about her late one night. And I don't get the smells, but she smelt the smell. And she was like, do you smell that? Do you smell that? And I was like, no, I didn't smell it. What does it smell like? And she explained what it smelled like. And I was able to go, oh, it's her perfume. She's here. And then like, we were kind of able to open up the dialogue with her as well. And we all have like a different part of that puzzle. So I wouldn't have been able to open that up without her bringing in the smell. And so that's why I really like to offer spaces where we learn to listen in the way in which we're being communicated to, in the way in which communication is happening for us.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then we have connect. So this is all about connection and how we are interconnected and nature and community. Yeah, the sacredness of this life that we live.
Which also would mean really being open to, I think it is another one of your points, just like the fact that what seems material is also full of intelligence.
And then the penultimate principle is flow. And actually not just these kind of flow states, but living in a place of flow consciousness, which really means living in a place of intuition and recognizing synchronicities and kind of where it takes us a little bit from the personal into the collective and being able to understand like collective programming and kind of release from that. And it's kind of like when we feel like we are really living our life. And this is also where I talk about pratibha, which maybe you can share more about. You know, that it means intuitive insight, embodied instinct, and creative inspiration all happening at the same time. It's like when you're in that space, the guidance is, it's in connection to like the web, the tapestry of everything and how everything weaves together. And so when you're truly in that space, it's not that your intuition will like lead you down a path that's somewhat selfish. It's really where you being in your intuition is in service to the greater picture. It's not necessarily an easy thing to cultivate, but it's possible.
And I think it's very important to understand that genuine intuition or genuine pratibha is always beneficial. It's always in connection with the demands of life. I'm a great lover of Sufi parables, some of which are quite out there, as you probably know. There's stories about the things that enlightened masters do that seem completely crazy and that turn out to have a higher purpose. Of course, lots of people try to imitate that without being in that state. But that's the thing, that the practices that you're talking about, meditation, cultivating stillness, listening, connection, are totally necessary before that deeper intuition, you know, begins to arise. And yes, when it does, it's possibly world-changing. I mean, if you think about Martin Luther King, for example, or Gandhi, or some of the great, you know, prophetic beings in this world, and you think about what their intuition showed them, how much they had to go through in order to trust it. And of course, both of them were assassinated. So it's tremendously courageous to live by pratibha, to live by that level of intuition. And I mean, let's say Steve Jobs, who you speak about in the book as an edgewalker, which is a great, great phrase. He was obviously a deep intuitive who operated a great deal out of, you know, out of inspiration, and very successfully so. But, you know, it almost can feel like someone like Steve Jobs was being guided by a particular evolutionary impulse, which was about the new and about innovation, but was not guided by any moral or ethical purpose. So that question, you know, of how you find the place which can both be an inspiration for innovation and creativity so that you're not ruining people's lives, you know, in the pursuit of your intuition. It's an enormous, and I do think you're right that the secret is that pratibha, that deep intuition that's a benefit. It's not selfish, not purely personal.
Yeah, and it brings about an interesting question of if that's possible in a capitalist model. And I, you know, definitely, of course, like, this is the world we live in. And in a way, it's an edge that there is money and people have to like make money and live and all of that. But the obsession with just growth, 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 growth. I wonder if there was a point where in someone like Steve Jobs that just got compromised, and then it went in a direction because that's the nature of this world right now.
Yes, and because power corrupts, and not to have your power be corrupting is very difficult. I mean, whatever kind of power it is.
Yeah, and I definitely quote Spider-Man, I think, somewhere in here and say, with great power comes great responsibility. And that is always true of the spiritual path and of intuition.
Yeah. So the final principle.
The final principle is trust. And that's what we've also been talking about a lot today. How do you give yourself permission to trust that which you know? How do you trust in who you are and what it is that you have to bring into this world? And how do you trust the cycles that we go through? And how do you let that be your evolution? And for me, this is also where the path of the sacred activist really opens up as well, you know, that you can, yeah, show up with humility and grace and make yourself available for what is being asked of you. Because it is a bit like that when you really follow your intuition, that you have an idea for your own life and that is not what you get.
Yes.
And so you have to keep trusting that, and it can be really uncomfortable, and you get blessings beyond what you could have imagined. And you have to trust in those as well and not get like carried away by that and get full of yourself. You know, sometimes it's like letting go of the things that you thought you wanted to be who you are. And that also requires a lot of trust.
And discernment. I would say, in listening to your story, I would say that the development of trust is obviously a big part of it, but also the development of the discernment that allows you to trust. You have an intuitive guidance system that lets you question, but not in a way that paralyzes you.
And that's practice, isn't it? It takes practice, and it takes feeling the consequences of not trusting or not listening. Or for me, if I get very clear intuition and I do the opposite, it's always a disaster, like a real disaster. Once you know things, like you have to embody that knowledge with love and show up for it. You can't just say, oh, actually, no, I don't feel like doing that. I'm going to watch a movie. Like, you know, you have to show up when you're asked to show up. I feel like you get tests that are smaller consequences that will prepare you for when the bigger things happen. But sometimes those small things, they'll still be, you know, a little bit, like they'll be big enough for you to see, like, oh yeah, I did. I could have just done that. And I knew that.
And this brings me, I mean, you have there's so many terrific practices that you describe, from the big ones, the deep ones, to some of the simple practical ones, like looking for signs, you know, and, you know, asking a question and writing with your non-dominant hand. I was very struck by one of the last practices that you taught, one of the later practices you talk about, which is the importance of keeping an intuition diary, because exactly what you just said, which is that it's really helpful to actually have a record of what happens when you follow an intuition and don't. So I think that's one of the most helpful things that we can encourage people to use as part of the practice.
because our intuition is, it's not like validated in the ways that we're used to having things validated. You don't get like a certificate or anything if you followed your intuition well.
Right.
At least not in this light. There may be certificates available in other realms. I don't know. Because we're so used to validation, we're so used to, you know, you're a good girl, you did that well, here's a star, that was a good thing, you know, and this kind of good, bad, like right, wrong. And because our intuition is so personal and it's like no one can validate it, because even you might not follow your intuition and things might look great from the outside. You know, you might still make loads of money or get a nice house or things that people validate, you know, that are culturally validated, and feel dead inside or be in like a complete inner turmoil because you know that you didn't listen to the thing that you were meant to listen to. And I feel that's why having the diary is really helpful, because then you're able to have that. And when you have an intuition come up, because the other thing that can really happen in my experience is that you might get pushback from people in your life around your intuitive decisions. They will want some kind of proof, and you can't necessarily give them proof, and you don't have to show them your intuition diary. But at least if you have done that practice, you will feel clearer in yourself. That might allow you to respond to those in your life with more confidence and clarity, which might also get people off your back and allow you to do what you need to do. And also that it takes it from being something where you're always second guessing yourself to coming into a place of self-knowledge and just knowing, oh, when I do that, this is what happens. When I do this, that's what happens. And I can look back and I can see five examples. And so I know that to be true about myself, because it's amazing how easy it is to forget these lessons.
It really is. You know, I think one of the things about, as you say in the book, that the ego will involve you in endless self-absorbed dialogue. This is the right thing. That's not the right thing. Oh, I screwed up there, blah, blah, blah. There's something about getting that on paper that allows discernment in a whole other way. So I think it's a really helpful and important practice. So my dear, we're coming to the end of our allotted time. And I would like to ask you if there's something you'd like to say as we close. I just would want to say to anyone who's listening, and if you're listening, you probably are intuitively tuned yourself, this is an extremely valuable book and on many, many levels. And if you use it, it will help you develop your intuition, trust your intuition, understand the purpose of intuition in extremely practical ways. So I just want to thank you for writing it. I think you've done a great job here, and I know many people will benefit from it.
Thank you. Yeah, for me, it's been like the intuition diary. It took me through a lot of remembering. And yeah, and as I said a few times, it's so important. Everything that we've been through in 2020 has made it even clearer how much we need to embody this intelligence that we have. Come into a relationship of deep trust with ourselves and live from that place. I feel things might get more and more chaotic in the collective, and that there's going to be more and more polarization. Our intuition is that compass that's going to help us to navigate that, all of that, and find our place within it. I feel like when I started to write this book, you know, I was thinking a little bit about like, oh, how do you make like the decision? Like which, you know, which corner do you turn through and all of that? And that all happens once you're in that place of that deep relationship with yourself and you believe in your intuition. That stuff all happens and that's great. But what really could happen that I'm really excited about, that I think is really important, is just this like unleashing of intelligence into the world.
Yes, right on. The more people, the more of us can learn to live from our deepest intuition, and connection, which is part of it, because what you really realize when you're intuitively guided is how absolute our connections with everything really is. Yeah, it's world changing. And we can't afford to live simply from our so-called rational mind and our personal self-interest alone. We really need that deeper connection. Yeah, so intuition is our life GPS. It's the guidance system.
Yeah, and just like the GPS systems that we use, the information is like passing through to everyone, and we're all able to leave reviews and comments and recommendations. And
exactly. So, yes, it's coming from the satellite, which is the satellite that arises from the higher realms.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a channel for that wisdom. The world needs channels and needs people whose clarity of being allows genuine intuition to take form. So thank you. Amisha, it's just a complete pleasure to have this conversation with you on what I think is one of the great subjects that we humans need to deeply understand and practice.
Thank you, Sally. And it says it in the book, actually, how grateful I am for you and for the Shakti that you are bringing into this world, and the ways that your support over the last few years has really been so potent and powerful for me. And in some of the trickiness of being an intuitive and being able to talk to you about that as it's been happening has been one of the things that has allowed me to write this book and to accept, you know, even just then when you said channel, I was like, I want my instincts to feel uncomfortable with that word, but actually I don't feel uncomfortable with that word because
it's the truth.
Yeah, we can't hold this stuff back anymore. What an enormous privilege to live in a part of the world where we can talk freely about this, and that there's so much open there, and that there's so much interest in it, because like that thing, everyone's like, well, why can't I put my foot down? It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So I want to say for everyone, if you haven't read Sally's books, Awakening Shakti and Meditation for the Love of It, and the beautiful audiobook, Doorways to the Infinite, please do. They are so powerful and potent. And if you get a chance to study with Sally, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. What is the course that you have coming up in January?
It's on the Yoga Sutra. It's on actually book 3 and 4 of the Yoga Sutra. It's the third in a series of 6-week classes that I've done on that text. This part of it is mostly on meditation. It's designed so that you don't have to have taken the other two parts. It's very standalone. And these are two parts of the Yoga Sutra that are not actually taught that much, strangely enough. It's going to be interesting. And it's a 5-week course. You can find it through my website. One of the things that we have the privilege of, because we're yoga students, you know, we're students of, I'm calling them yoga traditions, spiritual traditions, is to begin to understand how these old texts, which are pre-modern, you know, they don't take account of a lot of the issues that we face in this world. There's deep intuitive wisdom because those people who wrote those texts were channeling from the infinite. So they're a way of not just understanding what the nature of the wisdom that human beings receive, but also a way of checking our own experience, you know, against the experience of great enlightened teachers. So it's very helpful to connect yourself to those traditions without blindly following them, without getting lost in the tradition, but really learning how to take the wisdom of the tradition and apply it to life in this unbelievably fraught time. So, yeah, so that's kind of what I do these days, is I try to channel the great wisdom of the Indian tradition into what makes it practical for people like us, which is exactly what you're doing in a slightly different way.
If anyone hasn't done a course with Sally before, there's always a really wonderful sense of community around them as well. It's always wonderful to be with other people that are asking the same questions, that are looking for that wisdom inside of themselves through these gateways of the texts. So highly, highly recommend that.
And of course, the communities that you create are incredibly vibrant and intuitively wise and really interesting. So let's give a shout out to the power of community in this age of Zoom. How amazing it is that we can communicate with each other through these virtual means. So, Amisha Devi, I'm very, very happy and honored to be in this conversation with you. And I know this book will help a lot of people. So blessings and love to you and your communities and everything that is to come.
Thank you, Sally. And for everyone here, all our friends listening, you can purchase the book on the normal places through independent bookstores. There's some great ways of doing that now. And there's the audio version as well. We have another round of the Beautiful Leadership Immersion coming up in the new year too, which you're invited to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending your precious time with us. As always, you can find links to everything we mention in this episode, download our book, and discover so much more over on the blog. We don't believe in selling you things you don't need through this podcast, and so it's made possible with you, our community. If you loved this and would like to fund our show with a monthly donation or join our online group to connect with other listeners, please visit www.thefutureisbeautiful.co and click on Community and Support. Please also share with friends, hit subscribe, and leave us a review so we can grow. Those gold stars really help others find us so these ideas can spread. Here is to us, creating a beautiful future together. The Future is Beautiful is made by an all-female team working voluntarily or on reduced rates until our listener support grows. If you have been moved by anything you heard here, please donate the equivalent of buying us a drink. All donations make a huge difference to us and will allow us to keep doing this and remain advertising free. Until next time, I leave you with this question. How will you create beauty in the world?